case, which is Randall versus Rolls-Royce. Mr. Henderson.
We could have kept going for the rest of the morning. I know, that's what I thought.
His clients may not appreciate that comparison.
Good morning. My name is Tom Henderson. I represent the plaintiffs in this action. The fundamental error of the district court below was its failure to focus on the specific compensation policy that was challenged in the case, both individually and on behalf of the class. That is, a policy by which Rolls-Royce locked in prior base salary and brought that forward year after year to determine annual pay going forward.
What's the theory of discrimination as to the prior base salary?
What is the theory of discrimination? Well,
I didn't see one. That's the whole conceptual problem here.
In the class motion that was filed in the district court, we articulated there the theory that women were historically paid less than males in this work, which is largely engineering. This is building engines. That women historically were paid lower wages than salaries than men, and that has been brought forward year after year and brought forward by Rolls-Royce, notwithstanding their knowledge, having done internal systemic compensation analysis.
But your expert didn't correct for differences in the work.
Well,
some of these people are engineers. Some of them are, they're personnel officers and they're different jobs, right?
It's true that they're different jobs, but if you look...
Different jobs aren't going to be paid differently if there's if the market wage is different, right?
That would be true, but if the analysis that was done matched the criteria that Rolls-Royce's own compensation policies said were the governing factors. Individual jobs are not paid differently.
Every company, in deciding how much to pay people, has to look at the market. You don't pay medical technicians the same salary that you pay surgeons, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. And if you look at the compensation...
More women who were medical technicians than were surgeons relative to men, then their base pay would be less, right? So how is this case different?
This case is different because what you're referring to as the market effect on salaries is in Rolls-Royce compensation scheme is factored into the control point, which is the alphabetical indicator of the salary grade. There's a number and then an alphabetical unit. Its own policy says that the ranges for the control points, you have the salary grade, are adjusted for different values in the marketplace of jobs that are in the same salary grade, numerical salary grade. If your job is in the same numerical salary grade in Rolls-Royce, the policy says that job is valued the same by Rolls-Royce. If your job is in that class, in that salary grade, then it has the same value internally to Rolls-Royce. The additional alphabetical indicator is supposed to take into account market effect so that if a job internally has the same value to Rolls-Royce...
But the defendant's expert shows that, in fact, the nature of the job these people do has a big impact on their pay, even if they're in the same, ABC.
But the difficulty with that analysis is that the salary policy doesn't differentiate salaries based on individual jobs. It does it on the grade.
There's a policy, and then there's an actual system of compensation, right?
But this is the actual system of compensation.
Well, not, because according to their expert, which I don't think you've demolished, the nature of the job, but the engineers get paid more than the people in personnel.
Well, that's actually, I don't believe what he actually found. There's two things with respect to job that he did. One, he said you should control for job. But the problem is, if you control for job, you introduce so many variables, because there are so many individual job titles that you destroy the ability to do any statistical analysis.
This is a great case for a class action, right?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Maybe this is not an appropriate case for class action, because there are so many different wages. It's not like hourly workers. Everybody's getting paid differently, and they're doing very different jobs, and they have different seniority, and everything's different.
Well, but in fact, Your Honor,
as soon as you introduce the difference in jobs, that erases what you regard as the discriminatory, the gender effect.
It doesn't eliminate the gender effect. It eliminates the ability to do statistical analysis.
Women engineers aren't paid less than men male engineers, are they?
Well, in fact, that's precise. Both of these plaintiffs are individual engineers. And, in fact, because the court misunderstood the policy that was being applied.
Well paid also.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Very well paid.
Oh, it doesn't matter if they're very well paid, if they're paid less than men, Your Honor.
It depends who you compare them with. They're better paid than some and less well paid than others. Well, I didn't see evidence that they're less well paid than people who have the same jobs and are male. What would be an example? Someone who has the same job and is male and is paid more.
Well, in fact, Your Honor, their defendant's own expert analysis demonstrates that in two of the 4 years for which data was available, Pettmeyer was paid less than men with the same job, and Randall in all 4 years. And that's Table 8 of Siskin's report at A833 in the record. And he acknowledges in his deposition that, in fact, those disparities are typical of the disparities found across the class as a whole.
So her job was what when she was being paid less than these men?
Well, both of these women are engineers, Your Honor.
What is her precise job? You know, there are engineers and there are engineers. What was Randall doing?
Well, I'm sorry, they held several different positions over the course of the year.
I know, that's one of the things that makes this not an appropriate case for class action.
Well,
but can you find some simple comparison?
I respectfully disagree, Your
Honor. Find me some simple comparison, all right? Make it very simple.
Well,
job Randall has, she's paid less. A man has the same job, paid more. Okay, nice, clean, your best example of discrimination.
The best example would be Ms. Pettmeyer, Your Honor. For example, the vice president over...
Okay, so what's her job?
I don't recall what her position was at that precise time, Your Honor.
That's what I want to know. I want to know what her job is, and I want you to give me a man who has a similar job, or the same job.
There's an affidavit by Mr. Carter, who is the vice president over the manufacturing operations in which she and the comparators that were offered worked. That vice president said they had the same job, they had the same reporting structure.
I want to know what the jobs are. If you don't know, you don't know.
I've told you I didn't know, but the job was director of operations.
What does that mean? Director of operations of what?
It was a director of operations, I believe, in manufacturing. Affidavit of Mr. Carter, he was the, at the time, Vice President of Business Operations for Rolls-Royce Corporation, and the comparators, the people that he said...
Just pick me out. Look, tell me what the Director of Operations does, and then find me a man who has a similar job.
Well, Your Honor, I'm trying to suggest is
that. How are you going to get to first base in a case?
If
I don't want to see his affidavit. You just tell me, what's her job? What's the man's job?
They all had the same job title, Your Honor. They were all supervised.
I don't care what their job title was. There are a limited number of job titles in a company, and there are people who are doing very different things. She's obviously not the director of operations for all of Rolls-Royce, right? She's some little. She's got some little piece of Rolls-Royce, right?
Well, they all had pieces of...
Well, what is her piece? What does she do? Director of operations for what? How many people work for her?
They varied at various times, and they,
well,
as they did for the men.
That's a very helpful answer. Just, so you don't know how many people she works for. It means you don't know how many people the man you're comparing her with worked for. What if she supervises five people and the man supervises 100? He's going to be paid more.
He is not, according to Rolls-Royce salary structure, he would not be. That is not a determining factor for what
That's
your base salary is.
Everybody is paid more who supervises more.
I beg to differ. If you look at the manner in which the base salary policy operates at Rolls-Royce, that is not a factor that is taken into account. And this the declaration by this vice president who supervised all of she and the comparators said they did the same work, they had the same positions, and she was paid less than they. So my point, Your Honor, is that according to the manner in which the policy that's being challenged sets salaries, those are the operative facts. Those are the operative criteria according to which base salary is set. And when you compare those, they are paid less. Indeed, the defendant's own expert did an analysis that shows the other explanation the district court said, well, some of the men had more tenure. Some of the comparators had more tenure, so they're not even comparators. But in fact, if you the defendant's own expert did an analysis that shows that even when you control for tenure, these women were paid less than men in the same position and salary grade and structure. So the evidence establishes both with respect to the class-wide pattern of that women were paid approximately 5% less in the same when you control for tenure, time and grade, the salary grade, both the level and the control point, the personnel area, the performance rating, and the educational level. Controlling for all of those things, women are still paid 5% less than men, equivalent women, and that distinction was found to be statistically significant at from 6 to 8 standard deviations, so in an astronomically high...
Is it your view that the damages in this case would be the woman's 5% of the woman's wage in the complaint period of all the women employed by...
Well, the equitable back pay relief here, Your Honor, could be determined statistically on the basis of the salary factors to be considered in the salary structure and computed on a formulaic basis.
I don't know what you're talking about. Why is it, you say they're paid 5% less?
Yes.
So why isn't the appropriate measure of damages? They get 5% more.
Well, that would be a simplified statement of what I said. Yes, that's exactly right. You would eliminate by injunctive and back pay relief
all the women who work for Rolls-Royce?
In the class, which is in salary grade 71 through 75. I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Okay, thank
you.
Mr. Henderson. Mr. Stoner.
Good morning. In the opening brief of the appellants, they raised three issues with respect to the class, some of which have been addressed by Mr. Henderson and by Your Honor's questions. Three questions with respect to summary judgment and one question with respect to intervention. I'm going to start with the class claims. And the first claim is that the court somehow ignored what they contend to be the single policy that gave commonality to this case. The court found, of course, there was a lack of commonality. That's being that they used base pay in any way whatsoever with respect to benchmarking any other pay decision. What the court said is that you can't, for purposes of Rule 23 commonality, try to squeegee out of a very comprehensive system one part of it and say that's a common issue. mean, this compensation system is very comprehensive. There are bonuses, there are merit increases, there are equity adjustments, there are critical skill adjustments. It's an interwoven process. And in fact, during the course of this case, the plaintiffs, notwithstanding their argument in their appellate brief, assaulted the entire comprehensive system. At one point, they alleged there was too much discretion in equity adjustments. And in fact, reflective of that is that their expert did studies about various components, equity pay, bonuses, and their expert found that there were no inequities at all between men and women in doing those studies. But he didn't report it. The way we learned of it is in the expert discovery. And our expert looked at that and reported to the court what their expert had found, about which there was no disagreement. So the court on commonality looked at the evidence from both sides, unreported and reported, and she found, among other things, that in a person, in many, between the various personnel units, and I don't mean just jobs, I mean personnel units, helicopters, engines, different, big, very different personnel units, there were no differences between men and women. In the salary grades, and there's five salary grades, 71 through 75, there were no differences in most of them between men and women year over year, and especially none in the positions held by these two plaintiffs, which were grades 74 and 75.
What was the settlement, I think it was in 1998, with the Department of Labor designed to remedy? Is that the right year?
The district court considered that. The district court, if you look at page 19 of the opinion, questioned whether that would be admissible. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the record of that, that is an OFCCP audit. There were monies paid.
Sorry, I didn't hear you.
It was a federal contract compliance audit back in 1998. It dealt with some parts of the job, and there were some adjustments back in 1998. The district court commented that if it were going to trial, it would probably not have been admissible. But if anything, if that's the only evidence being proffered, if you make a settlement with the government to make some adjustments that the government found after a very probing inquiry, I think it was about $500,000, you know, why wouldn't that have been an indication that you corrected any pay inequity in whatever jobs there were? And that's
right.
How the district court treated that.
Well, my question was to the context of it, because I wasn't clear on that, and apparently it was part of a routine audit in connection with contract compliance.
They have affirmative action plans, and they're audited by the government. And
okay.
It was in a context of that it was a compliant audit. That's the context
okay.
of it, Your Honor. But as I was saying, the court looked at all these various findings and just simply rejected commonality. I mean, different personnel units, different results, different components of the pay. Women were treated equally. Now, plaintiffs, as they tried to do today, seem to suggest that the court looked incorrectly at the statistical evidence. And they would want you to accept the fact that at the beginning of the class period, as measured by their expert, there was a disparity between men and women. And to your question, Your Honor, the judge pointed out at paragraph 19 of her opinion that there's no evidence of discrimination. There's just absolutely nothing. So the whole concept is that there was and any plaintiff could do this, measure at some point in time, find a disparity, as they measure it, not as our expert measure it. And then if you don't catch up, then that's discrimination. But when you look at what happened of the decisions during the class period on equity adjustments, bonuses, merit increases, if you look at every decision made by Rolls-Royce decision makers, and there are hundreds of them, and you roll them up, you do it any way you want to. There's no dispute. Women were treated equal to or better than men. Plaintiff's theory conceptually is that you have to, and they've never identified in what time frame, that if you measure a disparity at any point in time, you've got to catch up right away. That would mean that you'd have to have a compensation system that was significantly, statistically favoring women in order to catch up. And, of course, that's not the law, particularly where there's no allegation of or any basis for discrimination as you benchmark that claim. Now, what the court did with the data is they looked at the flaws, they looked at the interactive models, they did the kinds of things that I'm saying, and the court weighted that. The court looked at the quality of the evidence, they looked at the methodology of the experts, and the court simply looked at that mosaic, and the court did not set any standard. That's one of their claims. That's their second claim in this case, that somehow or another the district court set a standard that would make statistical analysis unavailable. That's not what the court did. You look at the court's opinion from page 19 to 21, the court went through all these analyses and very carefully sorted out and weighed that evidence to find that the requirements of Rule 23 were not met. That's a mosaic. That's particular to this case. That's not a standard for any other case. Every other case, the analyses, the claims will be different. What our expert did was model the claims. For example, if you're claiming that there are 200 women at the beginning of the class period that didn't catch up, you don't look at people that came in during the class period and were demoted during a class period or were promoted during a class period. You look at those people and you benchmark them to see what happened at the end. And our expert, when doing that, and that's undisputed, actually women were not paid less at the beginning. And even if you accept Dr. Drogan, they caught up at the end. And that's in Dr. Siskind's tables 20 to 21. Finally, on the class issues, with respect to B2, if you think about and what the court said there is that they're just playing lip service to the injunctive relief. What they basically are saying, stop discriminating. And to Your Honor's question, it's what would you want us to do? And what they want us to do, as far as I can discern it, is to make somebody whole dollar for dollar, even absent any showing at the benchmark of discrimination, even absent any finding that any decision maker made a discriminatory decision about pay during the class period, that you want to make it up whole dollar for dollar. That's monetary relief. Call it equitable, call it legal. It's not incidental to injunctive relief. And the injunctive relief question is to do that. That's not an injunction. That's not to stop anything. That's to go back and pay women a whole bunch because our expert says that at the beginning of the class period there was a difference. Now, I will go on to the summary judgment points because they raised three with respect to them. And Your Honors covered those questions too. The first is their argument that it was discriminatory because Randall and Pettmeyer were paid more than comparable males. Well, we just saw it. There's no comparable male. There, to the extent you can find, and the court actually did a very good job with that. The court looked at what both experts said. And I should mention, because Mr. Henderson mentioned, if you look at Table 8, what Dr. Siskind did is he looked at what Dr. Drogan did, and what Dr. Drogan was doing was taking a look at everybody in the salary grade. The argument that if you're in salary grade 74, regardless of what your job, regardless of what your responsibilities, you're comparable. And he said even looking at it that way, Pettmeyer caught up and was paid more. That's what Table 8 reflects. But that's not Dr. Siskind's analysis. Dr. Siskind's analysis is in other tables, and that's what the court dissected, both sides. And she said you can't look at people with different responsibilities and with different tenure and find that they're comparable. And the people that the plaintiffs specifically alleged were comparable had 10 to 24 years more tenure with the company. Now, I personally believe it's just common sense that if I've been with a company.
Anderson said that the company policy was not to make a tenure differential.
Well, the company policy, it's not a collective bargaining agreement. It's a compensation system that looks at market surveys and it's trying to keep people. So it doesn't mention seniority as you would in a collective bargaining agreement, but it talks about people's qualifications. Presumably, if I've been doing the same thing for 24 years more than you, I might have learned something along those 24 years. So that's arguing that tenure can't be at all considered for purposes of this analysis, i.e. comparability for purposes of pay discrimination, simply because the word's not in the policy. And that's what, Your Honor, just common sense. If I've been there 24 years more than you. I've had 24 more opportunities to have my pay adjusted than you have. So you want to have people at the top of the grade because you get to the top of the grade and you bump up against that.
It factors in a qualitative rather than a quantitative way. It's not a step system, but it factors into the subjective analysis under all of these variables.
You can look at it both quantitatively or qualitatively, but when you look at the people that are identified, they're just not comparators. So you can't make a prima facie case of compensation discrimination if you can't find somebody that you can point to. And you can't go back to the adage that, well, it's discrimination generally because there's among all men and women, there's this benchmark of 5% or 8%, which the court pointed out there's no evidence that's measured correctly, or even if it's measured correctly, that it's attributable to some kind of policy of discrimination.
And all of the male operations directors who were Pepmeier's comparators had something between 10 and 20 years of
everyone that they identified, and that's what it was. It was operations director, so anybody with that title. And the court pointed out that they had different production requirements. They managed different numbers of people, more than Ms. Pepmeier. But they also had, I think the lowest was 10, and there were two that had 24 years more tenure. The same analysis sort of pertains to promotion claims. In their reply brief, they argue that one, and I'll just use this as an example because apparently appellants believe that this is the strongest example. There was a vice president of quality job that got broken apart, and they were hiring a new vice president of quality. The person who got it, a gentleman by the name of Mr. Kleiner, was already a vice president. He had 20 years of experience in quality. Ms. Pepmeier was applying for a promotion. She was a director, and she didn't get it. The gentleman that was a transfer that had 20 years of experience got it. I don't think under the law that gets to the prima facie level either. And then finally, Your Honor, with respect to intervention, because there was a belated attempt in this case, and I think I should mention it because it's before the court, and I think it's important because we don't want to redo this case. This case should be over. But the two individuals that they sought to intervene, they indicate that it was timely. Well, not timely. The class certification had been denied. The two individuals they sought to be interveners had actually filed declarations during the pendency of the class on the motion for class. They also say it would be prejudicial to them. The last time I checked the law, no one has a right to have their case heard as part of a class action. These two individuals have timely claims. It's not disputed. They've got claims pending before the EOC. They can pursue them. And finally, with respect to prejudice, which they ignore, Your Honor, this case went on forever. Court pointed it. I think she's referred to it as an imperceptible pace in plotting. And this is not a matter of another deposition or two. This is a matter of expert analysis, briefing, and a lot more discovery. And that shouldn't occur. The case is over, and we ask you to affirm the, we think, very well-reasoned and very carefully considered opinions of the lower court.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Stoner. Mr. Henderson?
Just a few points with respect to the commonality point that Mr. Stoner was discussing. The standard adopted by the district court was that of the defendant's expert, who admitted in his deposition that the four criteria he proposed for commonality he had never before proposed, and nobody else in the field of statistics would agree with him. That standard happened to be one that exceeds even the showing necessary for liability. In particular, that standard was trying to determine whether the disparities in pay of women was exactly the same if you subdivided it into a variety of different ways. That's not what required to establish liability. And in fact, the laws of statistics will tell you that there is, of course, going to be variation in statistical effect among various subunits, so you know that's going to happen. It is therefore a standard which is determined always to demonstrate that there will not be commonality because, practically speaking, that result will never obtain in a statistical analysis. Secondly, the notion, again, the challenged practice here was simply the determination of base pay. That is a separable and distinct policy that is operated.
What about Mr. Stoner's argument that the differential precedes the complaint period, so that your real complaint is their failure to rectify the difference during the complaint period?
If I may address that, Your Honor, what the evidence in the record shows is that the differentials in base salary of women existed at the beginning of the class period or prior to the class period in 2003 and was replicated each year thereafter. In fact, the Rolls-Royce did these systemic compensation analyses because they are federal contractors and they have to comply with the federal affirmative action standards. They did these studies. And when they did the studies in 2005 and again in 2006, those studies each initially showed standard disparities in the pay of women at six standard deviations, and always above 2 to 3 standard deviations, including controlling for a number of criteria. Those studies also, they had an intervening study that tested whether the annual increases that were given were similarly discriminatory against women, and what they found is they were not. The percentage increase of base salary that was given was not. But the significance of this is, even though the annual increases weren't discriminatory, even after they were given, the base salary remained discriminatory.
So you're saying that the violation was the failure to give larger increases to women so as to erase this disparity?
I wouldn't say that the violation was the failure to give larger increases. I would say that the violation is the failure to adjust base salaries, which then are carried forward every year, in a way that paid women base salaries equal to men. Then clearly the merit promotions or the merit increase system would operate in a truly neutral way, because the outcome with the base salary, the resulting base salaries would be equal. And that's the gravamen of the complaint, that's the gravamen of their arguments, and that's why the court erred in denying class certification. It failed to recognize that policy.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Henderson and Mr. Stoner. Next case for argument.